Chapter 18. Not go out of doors anymore. One day, after much thinking which seemed to distress her, she said she wanted to write something. A desk was put upon her bed with pen and paper, and at her request she was left alone. She remained writing for a short time, folded her paper carefully, called Elizabeth Jane to bring a taper and wax, and then, still refusing assistance, sealed up the sheet, directed it, and locked it in her desk. As he had directed it in these words: Mr. Michael Henchard. Not to be open till Elizabeth Jane's wedding day. The latter sat up with her mother to the utmost of her strength night after night. To learn to take the universe seriously, there is no quicker way than to watch to be a waker, as the country people call it. Between the hours at which the last tosspot went by, and the first sparrow shook himself, the silence in Casterbridge, barring the rare sound of the watchman, was broken in Elizabeth's ear only by the timepiece in the bedroom ticking frantically against the clock on the stairs, ticking harder and harder till it seemed to clang like a gong. And all this, while the subtle-souled girl asking herself why she was born, why sitting in the room, and blinking at the candle, why things around her had taken the shape they wore in preference to every other possible shape, why they stared at her so helplessly, as if waiting for the touch of some wand that should release them from terrestrial constraint, what that chaos called consciousness, which spun in her at this moment like a top, tended to, and began in. Her eyes fell together. She was awake, yet she was asleep. A word from her mother roused her. Without preface, and as the continuation of a scene already progressing in her mind, Mrs. Henchard said, "Colin, you remember the note sent to you, and Mr. Farfrey asking you to meet someone in Durnover Barton, and that you thought it was a trick, to make fools of you?" "Yes." "It was not to make fools of you, it was done to bring you together. Was I did it." "Why?" said Elizabeth, with a start. "I wanted you to marry Mr. Farfrey." "Oh, mother." Elizabeth Jane bent down her head, so much that she looked quite into her own lap. But as her mother did not go on, she said, "What reason?" "Well, I had a reason. 'Twill out one day. I wish it could have been in my time. But there, nothing is as you wish it. Henchard hates him." "Perhaps they'll be friends again," murmured the girl. "I don't know, I don't know." After this her mother was silent, and dozed, and she spoke on the subject no more. Some little time later on, Farfrey was passing Henchard's house on a Sunday morning, when he observed that the blinds were all down. He rang the bell so softly that it only sounded a single full note and a small one. And then he was informed that Mrs. Henchard was dead, just dead that very hour. At the town pump there were gathered, when he passed, a few old inhabitants, who came there for water whenever they had, as at present, spare time to fetch it, because it was pure from that original fountain from their own wells. Mrs. Cuxham, who had been standing there for an indefinite time with her pitcher, was describing the incidents of Mrs. Henchard's death, as he had learnt them from the nurse. "And she was white as marble stone," said Mrs. Cuxham. "And he likewise such a thoughtful woman, too, ah, poor soul, that a minded every little thing that wanted tending. Yes, apostrophe," says she, "when I'm gone, and my last breath's blowed, look in the top drawer o' the chest in the back room by the window, and you'll find all my coffin clothes, a piece of flannel that's to put under me, and the little pieces to put under my head, and my new stockings for my feet, they are folded alongside, and all my other things. And there's 4 ounce pennies, the heaviest I could find, a tied up in bits of linen, 4 weights, 2 for my right eye and 2 for my left," apostrophe she said. "And when you've used them, and my eyes don't open no more, bury the pennies, good souls, and don't ye go spending them, for I shouldn't like it. And open the windows, as soon as I am carried out, and make it as cheerful as you can for Elizabeth Jane." Apostrophe, ah, poor heart. Well, and Martha did it, and buried the ounce pennies in the garden. But if he'll believe words, that man, Christopher Coney, went and dug 'em up, and spent 'em at the Three Mariners. Faith, Apostrophe he said, why should death rob life o' fourpence? Death's not of such good report, that we should respect and to that extent, apostrophe says he. 'Twas a cannibal deed, deprecated our listeners. Gad, then I won't quite have it, said Solomon Longways. I say it today, and 'tis a Sunday morning, and I wouldn't speak wrongfully for a silver sixpence at such a time. I don't see no harm in it. To respect the dead is sound doxology, and I wouldn't sell skeletons, leastwise respectable skeletons, to be varnished for anatomies, except I were out o' work. But money is scarce, and throats get dry. Why should death rob life o' fourpence? I say there was no treason in it. Well, poor soul, she's helpless to hinder that or anything now, answered Mother Cuxham. And all her shining keys will be took from her, and her cupboards opened, and little things they didn't wish seen, anybody will see, and her wishes and ways will all be as nothing. 19. Henchard and Elizabeth sat conversing by the fire. It was 3 weeks after Mrs. Henchard's funeral, the candles were not lighted, and a restless acrobatic flame, poised on the coal, called from the shady walls the smiles of all shapes that could respond to the old pier glass, with gilt columns and huge entablature, the picture frames, sundry knobs and handles, and the brass rosette at the bottom of each ribbon bell pull on either side of the chimney piece. Elizabeth, do you think much of old times? Said Henchard. Yes, sir, often, she said. Who do you put in your pictures of 'em? Mother and father, nobody else hardly. Henchard always looked like one bent on resisting pain when Elizabeth Jane spoke of Richard Newson as a seer. H. I am out of all that, am I not? He said that was Newson a kind father? Yes, sir, very. Henchard's face settled into an expression of stolid loneliness which gradually modulated into something softer. Suppose I had been your real father? He said. All you have cared for me as much as you cared for Richard Newson? I can't think it, she said quickly. Can't think of no other as my father, except my father. Henchard's wife was dissevered from him by death, his friend and helper Farfrae by estrangement, Elizabeth Jane by ignorance. It seemed to him that only one of them could possibly be recalled, and that was the girl. His mind began vibrating between the wish to reveal himself to her and the policy of leaving well alone till he could no longer sit still. He walked up and down, and then he came and stood behind her chair, looking down upon the top of her head. He could no longer restrain his impulse. Had did your mother tell you about me my history? He asked. That you were related by marriage. She should have told more before you knew me. Then my task would not have been such a hard one. Elizabeth, it is I who am your father, and not Richard Newson. Shame alone prevented your wretched parents from owning this to you, while both of them were alive. The back of Elizabeth's head remained still, and her shoulders did not denote even the movements of breathing. Henchard went on colon, I'd rather have your scorn, your fear, anything than your ignorance. 'Tis that I hate. Your mother and I were man and wife when we were young. What you saw was our second marriage. Your mother was too honest. We had thought each other dead and Newson became her husband. This was the nearest approach Henchard could make to the full truth. As far as he personally was concerned, he would have screened nothing, but he showed a respect for the young girl's sex and years worthy of a better man. When he had gone on to give details which a whole series of slight and unregarded incidents in her past life strangely corroborated. When, in short, she believed his story to be true, she became greatly agitated, and turning round to the table flung her face upon it weeping. Don't cry, said Henchard, with vehement pathos. I can't bear it, I won't bear it. I am your father, why should you cry? Am I so dreadful, so hateful to ye? Don't take against me, Elizabeth Jane, he cried, grasping her wet hand. Don't take against me, though I was a drinking man once, and used your mother roughly, I'll be kinder to you than he was. I'll do anything, if you will only look upon me as your father. She tried to stand up and comfort him trustfully, but she could not. She was troubled at his presence, like the brethren at the avowal of Joseph. I don't want you to come to me all of a sudden, said Henchard in jerks, and moving like a great tree in a wind. No, Elizabeth, I don't. I'll go away, and not see you till tomorrow, or when you like, and then I'll show you papers to prove my words. There, I am gone, and won't disturb you any more. 'Twas I that chose your name, my daughter. Your mother wanted it Susan. There, don't forget 'twas I gave you your name. He went out at the door, and shut her softly in, and she heard him go away into the garden. But he had not done. Before as he had moved, or in any way recovered from the effect of his disclosure, he reappeared. One word more, Elizabeth, he said. Who'll take my surname now, eh? Your mother was against it, but it will be much more pleasant to me. 'Tis legally yours, you know. But nobody need know that. You shall take it, as if by choice. I'll talk to my lawyer. I don't know the law of it exactly, but will you do this? Let me put a few lines into the newspaper, that such is to be your name? If it is my name, I must have it, mustn't I? She asked. Well, well, usage is everything in these matters. I wonder why mother didn't wish it? Oh, some whim of the poor soul's. Now get a bit of paper and draw up a paragraph as I shall tell you. But let's have a light. I can see by the firelight, she answered. Yes, I'd rather. Very well. She got a piece of paper, and bending over the fender, wrote at his dictation words which he had evidently got by heart from some advertisement, or other words to the effect that she, the writer, hitherto known as Elizabeth Jane Newson, was going to call herself Elizabeth Jane Henchard forthwith. It was done, and fastened up, and directed to the office of the Casterbridge Chronicle. Now, said Henchard, with a blaze of satisfaction that he always omitted when he had carried his point, though tenderness softened at this time, I'll go upstairs and hunt for some documents that will prove it all to you. But I won't trouble you with them till tomorrow. Good night, my Elizabeth Jane. He was gone before the bewildered girl could realize what it all meant, or adjust her filial sense to the new center of gravity. She was thankful that he had left her to herself for the evening, and sat down over the fire. Here she remained in silence, and wept not for her mother now, but for the genial sailor Richard Newson, to whom she seemed doing a wrong. Henchard in the meantime had gone upstairs. Papers of a domestic nature he kept in a drawer in his bedroom, and this he unlocked. Before turning them over he leant back and indulged in reposeful thought. Elizabeth was his at last, and she was a girl of such good sense and kind heart that she would be sure to like him. He was the kind of man to whom some human object for pouring out his heart upon were it a motive, or were it chivalric was almost a necessity. The craving for his heart for the re-establishment of this tenderest human tie had been great during his wife's lifetime, and now he had submitted to its mastery without reluctance and without fear. He bent over the drawer again, and proceeded in his search. Among the other papers had been placed the contents of his wife's little desk, the keys of which had been handed to him at her request. Here was the letter addressed to him with the restriction, not to be opened till Elizabeth Jane's wedding day. Mrs. Henchard, though more patient than her husband, had been no practical hand at anything. In sealing up the sheet, which was folded and tucked in without an envelope, in the old-fashioned way, as he had overlaid the junction with a large mass of wax without the requisite undertouch of the same. The seal had cracked, and the letter was open. Henchard had no reason to suppose the restriction one of serious weight, and his feeling for his late wife had not been of the nature of deep respect. Home trifling fancy or other of poor Susan's, I suppose, he said, and without curiosity he allowed his eyes to scan the letter. My dear Michael, for the good of all three of us, I have kept one thing a secret from you till now. I hope you will. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.